Hello, residents of Meepletown. This is Dean.
This is Darren.
And today we're going to be talking about lots of games like Ashes Reborn and Mage Knight and Salton Sea and Palm Laboratory and Koali Mini and so much more. So thanks for joining us as we seek to build community through board gaming. This is episode 170.
Residents of Meepletown, congratulations. If you're listening to this, you have made it. You have survived our most recent bout with some apocalypses. Some recent apocalyptic events you have survived. One of those being a solar eclipse. A total solar eclipse if you're near where I live up here in Indiana. But I don't know if you heard this, Dean, but many people were talking about the end of the world was coming with the solar eclipse, and which didn't make sense to me because we kind of have those all the time, don't we?
Every kind of big event makes people think that. But the newest one, Darren, I don't even know what the event is, but what is it? April 21st. So this might be our last episode. This could very well be our last episode. I think that's what I read somewhere. April 21st is supposed to be the actual end of time. The end is nigh.
Oh, really? See, I did not know what was bringing about this April 21st end of the world. I was only thinking about the solar eclipse and the most recent apocalyptic event, or at least the most recent event that had the most apocalyptic potential, at least here in the United States, and that being tax day. Again, I don't know about the rest of you residents, but for me, tax day feels, especially this year, like an apocalyptic event. I was driving all over town with a broken down car, knocking off liquor stores just to be able to pay good old Prince John. I mean, Uncle Sam. I mean, the IRS. I mean, the devil. You know what I mean.
Oh, my. That bad. Wow.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
You know, okay, end of the world, I don't think knocking off liquor stores is the thing that I'm going to be doing, probably. Who knows? You do crazy things at the end of time.
Looting, rioting, tax day just brings out the best and the worst.
I can just think of other places that I would rather loot than liquor stores, maybe.
I don't know why that's the stereotypical place that people talk about, you know, knocking off liquor stores to get some money. Because I feel like if anyone's going to be armed behind that counter, it's going to be the liquor store guy or girl, whoever that
may
be. Yeah,
you're probably right about that.
I don't know.
Speaking of the end of the world coming up on April 21st, I didn't plan these to coincide with each other, Darren. And maybe I'm wrong about that 21st day for the last day of the year or of the world. And in fact, this announcement I'm going to make might not even matter if it is the end of the world, but the end of the Golden Geek nominations is actually April 21st. Now, if the end of the world happens on that day, it doesn't matter. But for the slight chance that it doesn't end, that the world is still existing on the 22nd, we would love to have your nomination on the 21st because we would love to get nominated for the Golden Geek Awards.
Let's do this, Meepletown. It's not just about Dean and Darren. It's about all of you. We can start a board gaming revolution as we build community through board gaming in a nonviolent way. And it begins with the Golden Geek nominations.
But if we don't get the nomination, bring on the violence.
There shall be an uprising.
None of that. But we do appreciate all of the nominations. I know many of you have voted for us, and we really appreciate that. It's also really fun. I don't know if you have done all the voting yet, Darren, but if you go onto the Board Game Geek homepage, it's got the link on there that you can vote for your favorite games, for your favorite board game apps that released this last year, and then your favorite podcast. Not your favorite YouTube channel, not your favorite social media influencer in the board gaming world, but only podcast, which is fine because that's what we do. However, go on there and vote for your favorite games. I'm interested to see what that's going to look like. And we'll talk about that in future episodes. Once they do have the nominations complete, we'll talk about some of our favorites and who we think should win those. So you'll want to stay tuned for that for sure.
Yeah, for at least I feel like, I know we've mentioned this in the past, this is sort of, in many ways, in the U.S., our Spiel Awards in some regards, since Board Game Geek is the kind of most prolific board gaming website around. I feel like most people in the U.S. kind of treat this as our big award over here, even though it's a worldwide kind of deal. I feel like more people in this country pay more attention here than many of the Spiel stuff. But that could just be me and my misconceptions.
All right, we're going to jump into some games. But before we do that, Darren, I want to ask you, what is, for you, what matters the most of those, of these awards given out for board games? Which one are you like, okay, this one matters the most to me?
You mean of the different, like Spiel or Board Game Geek or Dice Tower, whatever? Yeah, I think the Spiel is interesting because that's very much a German award, but is often recognized, again, worldwide. But the ones I feel like I pay more attention to, or at least the ones that speak more to me and the ones I identify with more, would be the Golden Geeks and the Dice Tower Awards. Those are the two main ones that I look at. What about you?
Yeah, I agree with that. In some ways, I don't know. Golden Geek is cool because it's everybody voting, but I do like Dice Tower because you do have people who play a lot of those games.
Right.
And if, you know, more than the average person. And so I like the idea of that. But Spiel brings to my radar games that I may have never heard of. Almost every year that happens where it's like, I don't know this game very well. So I always like to hear about some games that are going to inevitably come very quickly after that to the United States. So all of those I think are interesting. I'm interested whenever any of those awards come up.
Yeah, and speaking of inevitability and the end of the world, let's talk about the end of this segment and move into some board games that we've been playing. What do you say, Dean?
That would have been perfect if I talked about Marvel United. You know, I told you I just got done with that Thanos campaign. I'm not right. talking about that today. I'll talk about it at some point, perhaps. But that I should have, and that would have been a great transition.
Especially if we had the new Marvel Champions campaign set, which is about Apocalypse. That would have even been more appropriate.
Good call. But as it is, I'm going to talk about something very small, Koali Mini. Something very different than the huge nature of an Apocalypse. Koali is a game that released in 2022. This is Gigamike? Is that the name of the publisher?
It is the French company. I want to say it's either Gigamike or Gigamike.
Yep. They do a lot of these abstract games, Koali Corridor, other ones like that. This is the only one that I've played now, although I've had all of these on my radar for a long time. I've just never had an opportunity to play. In fact, I was in a game shop that had all of these lined up recently, like the full-size games, and I thought, I want to play every one of those. And then, lo and behold, Koali Mini came in the mail as a review copy, and it is just a small box, you know, Targi size box, you know, those two-player square boxes. It's in that size. And in this game, you have a wooden board, a nice, thick, chunky wooden board, and then you have all of these... I would say paint blob shaped wooden pieces. So roundish wooden pieces. And you are going to have these two neutral colors on each corner of this 4x4 board. And you are going to be taking your color and taking one of your colors, yellow or red, and putting it on a stack that's on the board, and then picking that stack up and moving it around Mangala style. Although you can move it in kind of any direction, there's some orthogonally adjacent spaces. You can't go back on yourself, all of those sort of things. And what you're trying to do is get a 4x4. So it's basically connect four Mangala. And that is it. I take my turn, you take your turn. There's a lot of back and forth of me covering up your spaces and then you picking up that stack and moving it around until eventually you're going to get a 4x4, or you can have a kind of a stalemate, a draw, if you use up all your tokens and you've not made a 4x4, which has never happened to us. We've always done that. This is a really quick game, plays in, oh gosh, it says 15 minutes. Honestly, it's probably more like 5 or 10 minutes. Really, really fast, lightning fast. One that we've left up on our table recently, And if I'm making dinner, my wife and one of my sons will pick it up and play a quick game or two. We've just been leaving this one up and playing it a lot lately. So this is kind of cool. Have you played any of these games, any of these abstract games from this company?
I have not, but I really dig the look of them. I think this would be a fun one to play. It reminds me a little bit of, you know, some of the games that I've been playing, like Donuts by Bruno Catala and others, who too is a French designer. But I like the look of these, and I think they're fun. I'm curious, what's the difference between the mini version and the big version? Just the size? Is that it? Any other changes?
Yeah, and in fact, now that I've seen both, I want the mini version of all of these. Really? I will say it would be nice to pick up those chunky pieces, but they're still a good size even in the mini version of this. You don't really need that full size. Yeah, I would say kind of a deluxe chessboard size size board. Yeah, that's probably about right. And the pieces in this are I don't know, maybe a quarter of a size. I'm sure that they have the dimensions on here in the comparison, but it's been totally fine for us. I mean, it doesn't take up a lot of shelf space. There's several of these mini versions of these. I think there's four of them maybe that have the mini version. So I want to check out all of these now that I've played this one. This one was on my radar because Jeremy Howard posted this. I'm wanting to say, not the mini version, but the big version. I think this may have been his game of the year in 22, if I remember right. It was up there. It was something, wow, a game that he really was a big fan of. And so it's been on my radar since then. And this will stay in the collection. Good family, quick game to play before dinner for us.
Cool.
So for purchase for me, with the caveat, I don't know, you know, how much space do you have? If you have tons of space, I would say the bigger version would be good. And if you like these sort of abstract games, this is a good one. If you want something a little bit meatier, I'd say, you know, stick with Azul or something like that, because this is pretty light. Qawale, let me spell that, Qawale. Specifically, this is Qawale Mini.
I'm so glad you spelled that, because I spent like the first 2 or 3 minutes of you talking trying to find it on BoardGameGeek, because I kept misspelling it even when I went back to the show notes to look at it. I will go ahead and talk about one of the games that I've been playing here recently, and I mentioned this on Board Game Gumbo when we were on there not too long ago. So as we transition from your small mini game, let's talk about a game about the greatest show that could be out there on Earth, and that is The Circus. What more fun could there be than a game about the circus? You've got, you know, magical acts and fun and dark, very, very dark. Aren't you, when you think of the circus, don't you think of a lot of dark, dark colors, Dean?
I think of circuses at night, and this kind of has that feeling it's at night. Ah,
there you go. So the game I'm talking about is The Magnificent. This is a 2019 game that plays 1 to 4 players, around 60 to 90 minutes. And this is from the same designers who did games like Santa Maria, and which I did not know this at first, but Escape, Curse of the Temple, one of the designers also helped with that game, and Revive, a game that that I know you love, Dean. It actually has the same artist as Revive. I love the art on The Magnificent. Just the colors are wild. It's kind of a dark board, but very bright colors. If you look at the images of this game on BoardGameGeek, it's going to look a lot brighter than what it is in real life, just so you know. But this game is a very, very solid, but yet also themeless Euro game about the circus. You have a couple of actions and things that you're doing here. But one of the main reasons why I really enjoyed this game is the dice drafting. I'm a huge fan of dice drafting, and this game is full of these bright, colorful dice. It maybe is perhaps the brightest part of the game, these green and purple and orange and clear dice. And you're rolling these dice at the beginning of the round, and you're taking turns drafting these dice and placing one on these action cards that you have in front of you in your play area. And at the top of each of those cards is going to be a bonus action you can take once you place a certain die there. And then you're going to take these actions, and the strength of these actions that you're going to be able to take will be based on the pip value of the color of the dice that you just drafted. So if I just took one orange die that had like maybe like a 3 pip value, I'm taking that action at like 3 strength. But if I draft another orange die at maybe 5 with a 5 pip value, now I'm taking that orange action at an 8 strength. So you're drafting these dice, but one thing you have to keep in mind as you're drafting these is that eventually at the end of the round, you're going to have to pay for whatever color you have the highest value of, which adds a really interesting tension as you're trying to decide what action to take and what color die to take. But you're drafting these dice, you're taking these bonus actions, and then some of the main actions you're going to be taking based on these dice is going to be things like building. You can build out your own circus in your play area. You have a little player board, and it's got this little grid. You're going to draft these different size polyomino tiles of different colors, and you're going to be placing them in your play area, building out your tents and your circus. And when you cover up these little bonuses, you're going to get to take some really cool bonus actions. That's going to be a lot of fun. You can also travel around the board. You've got these three big dials where you can, depending on the dice color that you draft, you can move these carts, these caravans kind of around. And wherever that cart, that wagon lands, you're going to be able to take that particular action or gain that much money or that many points or what have you. You're also going to be, depending on what all you collect, eventually you're going to have these poster cards you're collecting, and you can take the actions on those, and that's called showing, where you're putting on a show, and you're going to be able to perform those posters, perform those shows, depending on what resources you've gathered and what tiles you have. As long as you're fulfilling the requirements of that, it's like recipe fulfillment, you're going to be able to perform those shows and gather those points and or money or whatever it has for you. It's very, very Euro-y, very much collect resources, trade this resource for that resource, perform this action, which is typically not my favorite thing. But you couch that kind of a game in at least a circus theme that I am at least interested in, even though it doesn't really play through in what you're doing. But the way that this game interacts, all the different actions, the dice drafting, the building, the traveling, the showing, the way it all interacts, I just really, really enjoy. And, you know, if you're going to give me some tiles, I can cover up stuff for bonuses. That's another thing that I just love. I love doing that. I love it in Baron Park. I love it in The Magnificent. I love those types of games. So this is one that I picked up dirt cheap on sale, somewhere like $10 or $12, maybe on Game Nerds. I don't know why this game ended up being so cheap, but maybe they printed too many copies of it. But for me, it's not like the greatest Euro game. But if I'm looking for a Euro game to play, this is, in my opinion, an easy one to teach and to get into fairly quickly, even though there's kind of a lot going on. On the pass play purchase, this one is definitely a purchase for me, especially if you can pick it up on the cheap. This is a good, solid game. The theme doesn't necessarily come through, but the way everything interacts and works, I'm just a huge fan. I'm never going to hesitate to pull this one out. And I know you and Johnny Meepletown talked about this one a while back, Dean. So this is one of your all-time favorites, right?
I rated this one pretty high. I think I was like an 8.5 on this one.
Yeah,
we talked about this on Board Game Gumbo, and one of the things BJ said was it forgettable, I guess, was not that it was bad. He really liked it, if I remember, but said it was, you know, kind of can get lost in the mix. That has been my case. You know, I haven't really played this a lot over the past year and a half, however long since we reviewed it. Probably longer than that, I guess. Probably 2 years. But I still really like this one. It is probably easy to teach. I'll take your word for that because it's been so long. But when you pull it out and look at all the stuff, I think that can be overwhelming for people. So like if I was going to pull this out to teach my wife, I think she would look at it and say, absolutely not, just because there's so much stuff on the board.
Yeah, but see, it comes with this really great little organizational tray inside there that keeps all your bits and pieces, all your gems, all your tiles, just all there neat and orderly. Makes setup so easy.
I need to get this one back out. That's a good call, though. That was a fun game. I really enjoyed this one when we played it.
This is a good one. Pick it up if you can. That is The Magnificent, and it is magnificent.
All right, I'm going to talk about Color Field. This was another review copy from 25th Century Games, and Color Field released this year. So did Kuali Mini, by the way. This one is, or it might not even be out yet. Color Field, I think, is out. I don't know about Kuali. But Color Field is another abstract game, tile placement game, where you have a board where you are putting these 2x3 grid of tiles onto your board and trying to figure out the best configuration to get the most points. A really simple game, but I'll have a paint palette with some tiles that have lots of different paint colors on them, up to four. I guess that's not a lot, but four different paint colors on the different sides. And I'm going to take one of those, put it onto my board, and then at the end of the round, score for the colors that are matching. So each tile is going to score up to, in the first round, it's just going to be 4 points, because if you're touching all four sides, that'll be 4 points. Later in the game, you can get more points based on a number. If it has like a purple color and it has a number 3, if that also lines up with the purple, I'll get 2 points because that tile is touching another tile. But then the other tile is also going to score a point. And so it's just, you know, getting pretty simple scoring how that works. You just go around, score all 6 of those tiles, and then move on to the next round. The last round of this, after the game is over, you'll also, you also get points for the longest connecting path of colors that you have on your board. So if I've got 4 connecting, I'll get points for that. And pretty simple. That's it. There's also some other advanced ways of playing this with other cards that you can use and, getting objectives and things like that. So I put this kind of in the category. If you remember me talking about Junk Drawer, Darren, Junk Drawer is a really simple game, also from 25th Century Games, I believe, where it's just like straight up polyomino placement game. That's that game, like super simple, really fast, but one that we really enjoyed and got to the table a lot. Color Field is kind of in that category. It's a super simple, but still thinky tile placement. Just again, straight up tile placement game where you're going to score points. It almost gives me the feels of Azul. I prefer Azul, but it gives me the feels of Azul, and the scoring is really simple, super easy to teach. But it also offers some brain burnery decisions. So Color Field is one that is going to stay in my collection at least for a while, just because it's all those things. I enjoy this. It's not the same game as Junk Drawer, but for some reason it gave me some of the same feels, because it's like a pure mechanism, and you don't get that a lot these days. A lot of it's like maybe too convoluted, and this is not that at all. So we enjoy this one. Play past purchase. I'm hesitant to put it into the purchase unless you are okay with these lighter games. You might prefer to have something like Carcassonne. You know, just it's another pure kind of tile placement game. But if you really like Azul and you want something simpler to pull out to the table easy, I would say this. It's not really that much. It's not simpler than Azul, but I don't know. It's faster, maybe. Maybe not even faster. If you like Azul, this might be a game you like. I am butchering this.
What other claims do you want to backpedal on real fast?
I don't think the end of the world is going to happen next week. That's my guess.
Okay. I'm there with you, but won't we be surprised?
That's right. This is a pretty game, too. I've been watching a lot of Bob Ross lately. So maybe that's why I'm enjoying this one so much. It's just blobs of paint on a palette gives me feels of Bob Ross.
And that was my question. You're talking about drafting tiles and putting down and making it look like an abstract painting. From the pictures I'm looking at, it just looks like blobs of paint. Do you feel like you're painting, or do you really just feel like you're laying down tiles with blobs of paint?
Yeah, it's very abstract. You don't feel like you're painting in this at all.
It's just blobs of paint you're trying to match up.
Didn't have to be paint at all. It could be just colors. Yeah. Gotcha. Or shapes, or whatever you want to do to connect those. It could be animals in a zoo, actually. You know, that would have been maybe even a better theme. Who knows? That is Color Field from 25th Century Games. Designer is Mondo Davis.
Well, let's talk about another fairly simple game to play and get into. This is one that was just delivered to me not long ago. It's listed on BGG as a 2022 game, even though I just had it delivered from a Kickstarter a month ago. This is Palm Laboratory. This was kind of thrown in with a Kickstarter of, the publisher of this game is Portal Dragon, and they had a Kickstarter for a bigger game called Colab a while ago that finally has delivered. And along with that was this little bitty, solo handheld resource management game called Palm Laboratory. If you ever played the game Palm Island, have you played Palm Island, Dean? Have you seen that?
No, I've seen the game, but I've not played it.
Okay, same designer. This is John Meetling. But the art for this one is very different. This is by Magdalena Prozowska. I think that's how you say that. Either way, I'm sure I butchered that. But the art is really cool. Where Palm Island was a fairly simple handheld game where you're just holding the deck of cards in your hand and that's it. No playing space needed. That was pretty simple. You're getting some resources, converting resources, just trying to score as many points as you can. This one is a little bit different. This one has some objectives and missions and things you're trying to accomplish while you're doing this. And again, it's pretty unique. It plays pretty quick. It's only about 10 to 30 minutes. But like I said, you're going to hold this deck of cards in your hand, and you're only going to be looking at the top two cards. Okay. And the art on this one being a laboratory, you got to envision this sort of has a Frankenstein / mad scientist kind of look and theme to it. And so you're going to hold these cards in your hand. The cards aren't the best quality, so just keep that in mind. But each card is going to be double-sided, and some have resource icons at the top and at the bottom of the cards, and almost all the cards have some kind of various actions printed on the top and the bottom, depending on how the card is oriented in your hand. And you can always look at and use the top actions of the top two cards in your hand. You just have to hold that top one a little bit askew so you can see the one behind it. And some of the actions you're taking with these cards are, you know, you might be, it might be a free action that just lets you store the card as a resource. If it has like a gear or a brain or a potion at the top of that card, maybe you can use that as a resource, which means you rotate it 90 degrees and stick that card in the back of your hand. And now you have that resource available for you to see and to use to perform some other actions. Because some of the other actions might be to rotate the card 180 degrees, you know, just flip it, or flip it to the other side of the card, because as you're turning this card or flipping this card, in theory, it gets stronger. It gives you better actions. It gives you more or better resources. And all the while you're doing this to try to accomplish some kind of mission that's in the back of that deck. And so you just keep flipping cards, rotating cards, storing them as resources. If you get to a resource that you haven't used yet, if that card ever gets to the front of the deck, it's gone. You've lost it. So now you have to put it in the back of the deck, right side up. But eventually, as you're going through this deck in your hand, you're going to come to your mission cards. And if you have the resources to accomplish whatever the first level of this objective or mission is, then you're going to be able to use those resources and then rotate your mission card. And so in theory, you know, you've got basically four different objectives you're trying to accomplish with each different mission card. And the game comes with a few different ones you can choose from to give it a lot of replayability and variability, which is different than the one I can remember from Palm Island, though it's been a while. But also, if you're not completing your objectives in a timely manner, you also have a danger meter card in the very back of the deck. And if you don't accomplish your objectives in time, you're going to have to rotate that danger meter card. So once you've rotated that or flipped that, you know, four times, the game is over unless you have totally completed your objective card. That may sound very confusing, but it really is simple. It's just a game that's held in your hand. You can play this, you know, if you're standing in line somewhere, you're at a con, you're just hanging out. Maybe you're sitting on a beach and just need something to do. In that case, I recommend Palm Island because those cards are waterproof. These are not. It's just a simple, not very great quality of card. The art is cool. The game is, you know, you're just converting resources and doing stuff. So for me, this kind of gets that, depending on your situation, pass/play. For me, this would be a pass. I only paid $6 for it, so I don't feel too bad about that. But if I had to choose between the two, I'm going to choose Palm Island, like I said, because those cards are waterproof, and the only time I'm ever going to play this is if I'm sitting on a beach somewhere and I need something to do. Most places I can go, I can find something else to do. But if you like the theme of this, if this sounds interesting and you need something just to pass, you know, 20 minutes or so of time, a game you can play just in the palm of your hand, then maybe it's a play for you. Maybe you check it out. If you can pick it up cheap, maybe it's worth playing. Have you ever played a game like this, Dean, where the game is just totally held in your hand?
No, I don't really have much of a desire to. But I see the, I see what you're saying about, you know, standing in line at a con or something like that. That would be a beneficial experience. But no, I have not.
I think most people would probably just pull out their phone and play an app or game or something like that. If you had to have something to do, if you weren't talking to the people around you, like I said, for me, this is strictly a beach game. And then I'm going to choose the one that's not going to melt in the water. So, but either way, that is Palm Laboratory.
Speaking of app games, if I'm standing in line and I want to pull out an app to play, I might play Summoner Wars 2nd Edition, which is the game I'm going to talk about next. Specifically, I'm talking about the app version of this. Now, Mapletown, you have heard me talk about Summoner Wars before. It has been on my top 50 list multiple times. Pretty sure it was on there this year. I don't imagine it would have fell off, but love, love some Summoner Wars. The app has been on, there's been a way to play this game on their website, and I've played it on their website quite a bit. Well, they now have the iOS version of this available, which you can test out. So you can just play two factions, just go on there and play. You don't have to pay anything. But because Summoner Wars has so many factions, there's lots and lots of stuff that you can do on there. You can buy these individually. You can have, I think, don't quote me on this, you might have to check this out. I think you can actually do this subscription base on there as well. I know that you can on their website version of it. There's a campaign version on there. I'm hoping to do a video of this at some point in the not too distant future if work will slow down, because I like this one a lot. Now, I will say I've been playing this one mostly on the iPad. My iPad's a little bit slow. I think maybe it's older and that's why it's hanging up a little bit, but games have taken longer than I would like them to. But for a game like this where you need to be able to read the text on the cards, I don't know, I don't have all of the cards memorized for this game. And so I need to be able to, you know, click on the card and be able to read the text and see what it does and then figure it out from there. So I prefer to use the iPad, although I've played it on my phone and it's worked. Maybe it's my old eyes. I think that's the way to go. But this game, just a brief description of how the game plays. You've got your cards. I've got my own faction. Darren, you have your own faction. We're going head to head. There's a board, and it's like a miniature skirmish game without the miniatures. You're using cards instead. So I'll summon my character out onto the board, paying the magic cost. And then I'll move different characters on the board, and then I'll attack. And attacking is very simple. I'm just rolling dice, and either it's a bow and arrow, which is the ranged hit, or a sword, which is a melee hit. And then I'll add those up and then hit you with those. There's no defense or anything like that on this. You're just straight up hitting them, and that's it. I'm trying to knock out your summoner. You're trying to knock out my summoner. That's it. Now, the game for an app game, it probably plays a little bit longer than I want to, and that's just because, like, it if you get a lot of characters out on the board that you have to smash through to get to the summoner, that can, you know, make for a lengthier game depending on which factions you're playing, all of that. So it is a little bit on the longer side, especially if you're playing through the campaign. Although the campaign, so far the games that I've played in the campaign have played pretty quickly. But if you like this game, for me, it's a no-brainer. If it's one that you don't get to the table enough, which for me, that is the case. Plat Hat Games was so kind to send all of the factions, so we have everything on there. And it's cool. I love playing through all this. It actually has made me, I don't have all the physical factions. It makes me want to go back and purchase all of those. So yeah, that is Summoner Wars 2nd Edition. You still have not played the physical version of this.
I have not. But I have played lots of Unmatched. So tell me, how would you compare those two? This kind of sounds sort of Unmatchy.
Yeah, the biggest difference I would say with Unmatched, you only have your characters on the board and that's it. You're not summoning anything. And this one, being Summoner Wars, is every round you're potentially summoning out new characters, gotcha, depending on how much magic you have and what cards you have in your hand.
Okay.
So it's waves and waves of these little minions coming out, potentially. And I like that. I like the fact that I don't know fully what you're going to be doing, like what you're going to have on the board, who you're going to summon, especially if I don't know your deck. It's best if you know all the characters from the decks so that you kind of have an idea of what's going to come out. But that revealing piece, I think, is really cool.
Yeah, stop holding out on me, man. You got to share this.
Yeah, this is one we almost played when we got together last time. It was on the short list to bring, but we just had too many other things to play. Maybe this summer, Darren. Or you can play the app and we'll play that together.
I don't know. Apps. Ugh, give me the willies.
Oh, well, that's Summoner Wars 2nd Edition, the app version of this. It is 100% a buy because the base of this is free. So why not try it out and then see if you want to get into more of the different factions? So I highly recommend that.
I've been playing lots of solo games like Palm Island and also like this next one, which I am super excited about. This is a 2023 game. This is, I'm going to forget how to pronounce this, Skowentir, I believe. This is designed by Morten Petersen. This is the same guy who sort of started or is behind the Automa factory, I can't pronounce that either, apparently. And the art of this game is by Vincent Dutrait and developer by Shady Torbay, who, if you recognize that name, is the brain behind the Onirum series of solo games. And just a lot of big names involved in this little solo game. It's published by Impatience. Well, I say solo game. This is a 1-4 player game, but really this is a solo game. I couldn't imagine playing this with anyone else. But basically, you know, you can play this in about 15, 20 minutes, longer maybe at the beginning because you're trying to figure out all the different intricacies of the rules. But this is a simple card game with a lot of little rules that seems like a lot to think about at the beginning, but it does become pretty intuitive after just a few rounds. These big, beautiful tarot-sized cards as you're playing this. The game is based on Danish folklore. How familiar are you with your Danish folklore here, Dean?
Not much, although I recognize some of the characters when I'm looking at the cards.
Do you really? Because I was totally blown away by much of this. Okay, so just to give you a brief recap, Old Eric, which is a devil-like character, is trying to capture the soul of the earth, who has taken the form of a common animal. Now, Dean, if you were the soul of the earth trying to avoid this demon devil-like character, what animal, what beast would you take the form of?
Trying to avoid? I would want to be something small,
trying
right?
to avoid, yes.
Small and fast, maybe a mouse.
Really? You and Paul Atreides, you know, Muad'Dib, you might think, you know, the soul of the earth would take on the form of a lion or some ferocious character to fight, or if it's trying to run away, something sneaky. Wachter, the name of the old earth, has taken the form of the unassuming badger. That's right, the badger. You're trying to move this badger meeple around this board of cards, which is just 6 tarot-sized cards, that they have trees on them, and they're arranged in a circle. And if old Eric, as he moves around, if he ever lands on the same tree as the badger, you lose. And, of course, so does all of creation. Again, end of the world. But you are not alone in trying to move this badger. You also have a deck of cards that's full of allies, other folk creatures that can help you defeat old Eric and his minions. Unfortunately, there are a lot of old Eric cards in your deck of allies, too. And if you ever have to take old Eric cards, which you will, he will move closer to the badger around your little board of cards there. But you do want to collect these ally cards so that way you can play them into the forest because you're going to need a certain number of allies in your forest to defeat the minions that are out there of old Eric. Now, these allies of yours, granted, they may be allies, but they too are also fallen beings. And so when you take them into your hand, they're going to cost you something, which usually hurts a little bit, but they will help you move. The numbers will help you defeat the minions. And some of them have very special powers if you discard them. So you have that balance of trying to puzzle out and figure out, you know, when to take these allies, when to play them, when to discard them, all that good stuff. I love about this game, the art. I think it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love how clear and concise the description of the folklore is, and the pronunciation guide, which was very helpful. Thank you for that. More publishers, please do that. Even if you don't think it's necessary, please do that. This game, I feel like, much like the Badger, is very unassuming, but yet has a bite. This is a purchase for me. I really enjoy this little solo game. Again, it seems a little quirky and fiddly at first, but once you know the icons and how the cards interact, it plays pretty fast. It is a very fun puzzle to play, in my opinion. I recommend it, especially if you like folklore and myth and that. You can learn a lot too while you're playing this. Does this interest you at all, Dean Dunning?
Yeah, it does now looking at this. The art is beautiful. You are absolutely right about that. The box, if I were walking through a store and saw that box, I don't know if it would draw me in, mainly because there's so much going on it. I would have to get closer to see all the details of it. And I'm too shallow to do that. And so I don't know if it would stop me in my tracks. But if I saw somebody playing this, I would want to stop and look at the art on the cards because it is very pretty. And the pedigree of the designer, the art development, all of that, all of those things that you said, that makes me want to check it out.
Yeah, it shows. You can tell that this guy has done a lot with solo games. That's, I would never play this with other people. You can, I'm sure it's fine. But just the smoothness of all the other Automa Factory games, I think really shines through in this. And again, it's simple components. It's these big, beautiful cards. You've got these big, chunky wooden meeples, one for old Eric and one for Wachter the Badger. And it's even got a few expansions you can throw in for variability or increase the difficulty. It has some really easy ways to increase or decrease difficulty, add more cards, take more away. Super smooth, super fun. That is Scowentier. And I think you're wrong. The box is striking.
I said what I said. All right. I'm going to move into a little bit of a solo / two player game. Another head-to-head game, kind of, I guess, is Ashes Reborn Rise of the Phoenixborn. Now, Reborn, Ashes Reborn, is a redo that came out in 2021, a remaking of Ashes Rise of the Phoenixborn, which came out in 2015. This is another one from Plaid Hat Games, and it is a review copy that we got from them as well. This game is initially came out as a head-to-head game where I am going to have my faction, my deck of cards. You'll have your faction. The box comes with six. I guess I could just look at the box cover. It probably has a picture of all of them on there. I think it's six. So I pick a faction, you pick a faction. We go head-to-head and try to knock out the other's Phoenixborn, which, again, like Summoner Wars, kind of like knocking out their Summoner, okay? But the cool thing about this one, it's not a straight-up card game. It uses dice in a way not too different from, like, Dune War for Arrakis or War of the Ring, where I start off with these dice based on the cards that I have built my deck with. Okay, so I'll pick basically two of these different dice sets to put together, and I'll have 10 dice. I'll roll those, and I'm going to use those dice to put cards into play. So a card will, you know, count, usually take a main action and a set of dice configuration that I spend those and put the card into play. You also, a lot of times, are going to put these spell cards into play, and the spell cards can kind of build on each other. So if I put a spell card, it might say, like, I can now summon this one character whenever I take an action from the spell. Well, if I have another spell card of the same type stacked on top of that, well, now it might be like, you can summon this card and it's going to attack for one or something like that, which is a neat mechanism that I've not really seen in a lot of games. But the dice rolling in this one is what really makes this game a lot of fun. The dice have their own actions associated with them on top of, like, summoning cards, and your Phoenixborn might also have an action associated with the dice that you have rolled. Really cool. Okay, so this is just going head-to-head until I knock out your Phoenixborn, and I'm declared the winner. But what I really want to talk about is the Red Reigns expansion. So you got Red Reigns, the Corpse of Viros, and Red Reigns, the Frostwild Scourge. Now, what this does, Darren, is it makes this a solo game where you're playing against the Chimera. And that is really cool. Well, the first one, okay, initially you're playing against the Chimera. That there's other stuff that you can do as well. But if I'm playing against the Chimera, it's going to be out there and it's going to be summoning its own characters and doing things to try to knock out my Phoenix Born while I'm trying to knock out the characters that it's putting into play, as well as trying to knock out that main Chimera figure. The way this does this is really smooth. You're just rolling a couple dice and the dice tell you what to do and you just do it. And usually that is revealing the cards that they set out, or once all those cards have been revealed, then they start attacking you, or they might come out and attack. But it's all done very simply. That's one thing about these type of games is I don't want to have a lot of rules overhead for the AI player. I just want to be able to play my game and then not have to think too much about what the other one's doing. This one does that big time for a game like this. It's done so well. I'm a big, big fan of playing this game solo. It's a lot of fun head to head as well, but I think the solo version is just really, really cool and one that I want to keep. I want to hold on to this one for a while. It's not as good for me as a game like Summoner Wars. It's not going to crack my top 50, I don't think, or anything like that, but I've really enjoyed my plays of it. And if you like these head-to-head games that you don't get to play very often and you want a solo version, this is the way to go, I think. I don't, off the top of my head, I can't think of one that does this better.
Would you say this game, do you like this game kind of on its own merit, or is it the solo version of this that's really kind of making you want to hang on to that? Because because in some ways it does sound a lot like some of the other games, you know, that we play, or that particularly you play. You love these dice rolling, card playing, you know, Star Wars Destiny type, you know, games. How does it fit into that whole realm of card playing? And is it primarily the solo part of it that makes you enjoy this so much?
No. In fact, I would say, I guess given the choice, I would prefer to play this head-to-head. I think it's a better game head-to-head, but I think the solo is just done really well. So, yeah, I put this in the category of one that I really like. World Breakers is one that we played recently. You and I got to play, and we both enjoyed that one. I think I like this one. I do. I like Ashes better, although World Breakers was fantastic as well. So yeah, it stands great. If you just get the base box of this and play head to head, that's way worth it. But if you like solos and these style of games, I think this is a big hit for me.
So this is the style of game, kind of like a collectible card game or trading card game without the trading or the collecting, correct?
Yeah, but you can, that's correct. It's more of like the LCG style. So these expansions also come with cards that you can add into. Sorry, I didn't mention that, but they, which one? The Scourge. What's it called again? Here we go. The Frostwild Scourge comes with cards that you can add into cards that you're going to play. So like new Phoenix Borns that you have, as well as the Chimera expansion deck. So it comes with both, and then you can kind of mix and match. But I don't love necessarily doing that. I'm not the biggest deck construction guy when it comes to games like this. I recently played Marvel Champions and Lord of the Rings LCG within the last week or two. And I love those games, but I don't love the deck construction piece of it. Phoenixborn, Ashes, Rise of the Phoenixborn also has that, but I would rather just have the decks that it tells me to make. And it's got this page in the back that says, hey, put this Phoenixborn with all of these cards and they'll use these dice. And I like that. I want to be able to just like drag and drop, copy and paste onto the table.
I thought you were dropping a dragon there for a minute is what you were saying. That sounded awesome. That's a different kind of game.
No, you can't drop dragons in this game, but no, that's it. Very cool. Glad I got to this into the table because I've been wanting this one for a long time. So thanks Plat Hat for making my dreams come true. This is Isaac Vega designer, who I really enjoy as well. So past play purchase depends on what kind of games you like. If you like these head-to-head card games, I would say this is a purchase. I've been really big on the games I've been playing today, some more than others, but this one I would say is a bigger hit.
All right, so for me, one last multiplayer game that really is a solo game, in my opinion, and in the opinion of most people in the board gaming community, from what I gather, I finally, Dean, after many years, I got to play Mage Knight, specifically the Ultimate Edition. And so for those of you that were around back in whatever episode it was, or we were talking about there at the beginning of the year about getting some games off of our shelf of opportunity slash shame, this one is finally off. So that with The Godfather, that's two down, only three to go with the rest of the year lying ahead of us. But so Mage and I, you know, one of the reasons why it took me a while to get to this one was because it's big. Again, it's the Ultimate Edition. The main game was like the original Mage and Knight board game designed by Vlado Shivatal back in 2011. And then he and some others have put some expansions into this, creating the Ultimate Edition, which was released in 2018. And we mentioned in the news story a while back, they've now announced another expansion coming out soon. I just played the introduction scenario. And part of the reason that was because it took me a couple of days just to sort out all the stuff in this big box, because it's got a great little organizer, but it doesn't tell you where anything goes. And there's lots of, like I said, there's a board game. There's three expansions to punch out and go through. There's three rule books. Okay. And Paul Grogan helped in the writing of this, which is fantastic because Paul Grogan does a great job. If you don't know, he's got a YouTube channel, Gaming Rules. He's doing less rule book writing and editing now. But for a while there, he was just killing it and helping a lot of companies, particularly CGE and WizKids and others, get some of these more complicated games straightened out. So the way the game actually worked, you have a walkthrough rule book. Like it's a whole rule book just to walk you through the introduction scenario. And then it tells you, okay, now you know enough to play the rest of the game. Go back and read the real rule book in its entirety. Then you can play the rest of some of the scenarios. And then when you get to the expansion, you can read the expansion rule book. So it is a lot. It is intimidating. But I tell you what, it's a whole lot of fun. This is kind of an adventuring exploration style game. It's got this huge deck building element. And as you're building up your deck, you're playing these cards down. And the card play, each card that you play, well, not each card, but most of the cards you play will have an upper power and a stronger bottom power. And that depending on what kind of mana, which is one of the powerful things you need to collect in order to improve and power up your actions and your spells, because yes, you will be collecting spells later because you are a mage, knight, after all. And so you're playing these cards out, you're trying to collect mana to power up your cards, and so you're really puzzling out how to best be efficient with your actions and your powers, because you've got this one little pre-painted miniature, mind you. Dean, you'd appreciate that. It's got some minis. Not a whole lot, but each of the characters have their own little pre-painted mini. You've got these castle minis, you know, Castles of Burgundy style from Awakened Realms, that special edition. It looks like that, but it's on a little, what was the game? The Hero Click style base. Mm-hmm. These castles have click bases that you're going to put out as you explore. You're going to start on one big map tile, and as you move from one tile to the next, you're going to flip over other big map tiles, and you're building the map. You're building the board as you go. But the main driving mechanism is that deck building bit. And man, I love deck building. I love exploration where you're flipping over tiles. And when you flip over a tile, you're going to see what enemies are there. And some of the tiles you'll put down immediately to show you what enemy is there. And some tiles you're going to put down face down. You won't know exactly what kind of enemy it is, because some of them you see in the daytime because you start the game in daytime. And then after a few rounds, it goes over to nighttime. And now things change. Some things are harder to move through. Some enemies are stronger. Some powers are stronger. There's a lot going on here. You're fighting orcs, you're fighting dragons, you're collecting spells, you're recruiting army units that you're going to put out on your area in front of you. And so when you go into battle, you not only have the cards in your hand, but you also have some of the actions and abilities from the units you've recruited in front of you. It is, again, like I said, I've only played the introduction scenario, but this scratches all the board gaming itches that I have. This is going to be a whole lot of fun. Of course, this is a purchase for me. And if you like any of the big adventurous, you know, let's build up our army and go fight some enemies kind of game, that's more than just dice rolling. There's really smart card play here. The only luck is going to be what enemy am I going to face thus far that I've seen. Everything else is kind of deterministic about what you're able to do with what you have. Love those kinds of games. Love those kind of puzzles. Everyone should play it. Dean, you're going to like this game.
Yeah, I know I will. That's why I'm staying away from it. This one has been so intimidating for me. Everything I read is always like, this is the solo game to play if you like this genre. And I never realized, Darren, until I just looked this up, but Star Wars Federation is the re-implementation. Star Trek. Oh, my goodness. I think I said Star Wars, didn't I?
You did.
Oh, boy. Wow. Some people are mad right now. Star Trek Frontiers. There we go. Star Trek Frontiers is the re-implementation of this, which does nothing for me because I don't like Star Trek.
Yeah, same.
But I can imagine that would be appeal to a lot of people if you like basically a space version of Mage Wars is what it sounds like. So I was looking at pictures of that instead of listening to what you had to say. Two questions. Yes. You mentioned the exploration. Are those tiles out there? And you mentioned the randomness of that. Are they random, or is it like you're setting up a scenario and it tells you which tiles to put where, or is it, what does that look like?
Good question. So there are different scenarios in the rule book that it suggests. You can do things kind of whatever you want, but it gives you some scenarios that you can play. It tells you what tiles to put in. And then most of the time you're going to shuffle those tiles up. There may be some special tiles you might shuffle up, but put at the bottom because maybe there's a goal objective somewhere in that bottom part of the stack. So it tells you what tiles to use, then you're randomly flipping them out, and then you have to line them up to match because there's a little system they have on each tile that tells you how to adjust it. And so certain terrains are going to be lined up that are easier and or harder to move through. And so no matter how many times you play that scenario, it's going to look different because the tiles may come out different, which require different enemies. And there's a ton of enemy tiles too that, again, you're going to flip out and use, but you're not going to see them all. So there's going to be lots of variability in that. And so it's not like a bad random where I don't have any control over it. It's a, oh, this is going to be different kind of random.
Okay. Yeah, I got to play this at some point. I can't imagine a world where I can add this into my collection and get it played. I've got so many of these type of games that I want to play that I've been, and that I have played, but like, Lord of the Rings, Journeys in Middle Earth. I've not played through that whole thing and I really want to. And so that needs to take priority.
Yep.
Descent. I've not played through all of Descent yet. And that's another one.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that makes sense. This is one that takes, again, the only reason why I actually got to this one was because over spring break, I had, the house to myself for a bit. So I just left out on the table. I read through it. I poured through it. I messed around with stuff. It took me a while. That was the only way that I got it. I got it done. And I can see this played at two player. I would never play it more than that. But really, one is going to be the best way because even two players will take a really long time because you're trying to figure out what you're trying to do. You don't want the other person to wait on you while you puzzle. Part of the fun of this game, in my opinion, is the puzzling out, the trying to arrange. Well, if I move here, no, I won't be able to do that. I'll be stronger if I go over here. So that thought process, the AI for this is basically you take another character from the book or from the game, and all it does is it advances the time of this scenario a little bit by moving tiles. It removes a few things from you so that way you don't have access to that, or advances the speed, and that's all it does. It's quick, bam, 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 their turn's done, now it's back to me. So I wouldn't play it with more than two. I think that would be fun. I like playing Gloomhaven or Frosthaven with two. I wouldn't want to do it with more than that. This one the same, but this, unlike Gloomhaven, which I don't think would be as fun solo, this one I can see being a whole lot of fun solo once I get into it more.
Yeah. Just don't forget about it for a while and then try to come back to it is what I hear. You want to play it all at one time.
Yep. As soon as school's out, it's coming back out on the table for a couple of months. That is Mage Knight, the Ultimate Edition.
All right, last game we're going to talk about today is another review copy. It's me knocking out a bunch of reviews, apparently. Games that
Attaboy.
A lot of these I've played a long time ago and just now getting to talk about them. This one is Salton Sea, which is a game that is from Devir Games. Devir Games has made lots of games that I've really, really enjoyed over the past couple of years. Some have made my top 10 list. If we'll see about this one. So this one is designed by David Bernal, and the art is by Amelia Sales or Solace. So let me read the description on this one first, Darren. So it's Salton Sea is a unique place located in California. It's very close to the border with Mexico. And its characteristics is that it's a salty lake, and it makes it a unique location to generate geothermal energy, which takes advantage from the heat from the planet. And in this area of intense geothermal activity, you will drill. In this game, you're going to drill in the ground and take brine, which will, once processed, it allows you to obtain the valuable lithium and sell it as part of a modern industry. So this is a game where you're taking on a company that is doing all of those things. You are going to be producing geothermal energy. You are going to be producing, you're going to be extracting the brine and then using that to produce the geothermal energy and lithium. And you're going to be selling these to fulfill contracts, and that's going to give you good stuff. You're going to be trying to complete these objectives. You are going to be upgrading your equipment, using technology to upgrade all the things, upgrading your equipment, upgrading the business side of things. So basically you have these different aspects. One is the business side of things, okay, where you're doing all those actions. One is that you are, the business side of things, meaning like the buying and selling and all that stuff. Then you have the actual like doing of the, extracting brine and then, putting it in the refinery and the factories and all that. And then you're also just doing the other like objective gamey type things. But how do you do this, Darren? Well, it is worker placement. I'm going to have these workers on my player board, and then I have these cards in my hand. These are dual purpose cards. You like that, Darren? You like dual purpose cards?
I love dual purpose cards.
So this one is interesting. You're using cards for money. And if I use that for money, I'm spending it and getting rid of it out of my hand. They're also the action spaces for your worker placement. This is cool. Something I've not seen in a game that I remember. Okay. So let's say I have a card that allows me to drill. Okay. I have all of these spots on my personal player board, but it's a weak action, Darren. It's all weak on my board, but the cards in my hand have stronger actions. So I might be able to drill down two spaces, play this card from my hand out onto the table, put my worker onto that card, and then I take that action, but I can no longer use that as money until the end of the round. And all the cards that you use to place for worker placement spots are going to go back into your hand. So they're not lost, unlike the money that you spend is lost. But when you gain money, you're going to choose from these cards off to the side. And you're thinking, do I want denominations of money are 5, 3, and 1. Okay. The fives are the really strong actions. 3 are really good actions, and 1s are better than your player board actions. Okay. So I like that there's different tiers for the value of the money. Oh, that's so, so cool, because the decisions you have to make of, okay, if I have to spend $3, do I want to spend 3 ones, or do I want to spend a $3 bill that is my really strong action? It's all that is very, it becomes really, brain burnery, I guess is the best word to use for that. There's lots of decisions to be made. You also have a track for your stocks that you can purchase, and in these different companies, and you're going to rise depending on how much money they're making through you selling these resources and things like that. So it's really cool. It's quite the business minded game, and it does take a little bit of time. But let me say this, Devere is a company that I really enjoy, but I don't always love their rule books. In fact, I'm going to say a lot of times I don't like the rule books. They're really confusing and just a lot to wade through. I didn't, for a game that is decently heavy. I mean, teaching this is not super bad, I don't think, but for a game like this that has a lot of moving parts, I think the rule book actually does a pretty good job. Devere did a good job on the rule book on this one, considering what you have. Now, there's some areas it could have been better, but that's any rule book, I guess. I'm digging this game a lot. I think this is really cool. Is this the next White Castle or Red Cathedral or any of the other ones that they put out? Maybe not. I don't know if this one's going to get as much traction. It's the look of it is, I like it. The box cover is cool. The it's just really pale, kind of pastel colors of a lake with a factory. So that's not going to draw a lot of people in necessarily, but the graphic design on this one is really well done, super simple, and everything's easy to read. It's a cool game. I want to get this one to the table more. I want more people to know about this one, just because I think this could be a big hit for people that like these like economic heavier games, but it's not like crazy heavy. It says weight is 3.8 on BGG right now. That's probably about right. I'd say that's right.
Yeah, I'm glad you're excited about this game. This is one that, you know, when we got together in Louisville, I felt like you really wanted to play this and kind of passively aggressively try to push this upon me to play. I appreciate you not going through that. You said a few things there that do appeal to me, like Devere. I like Devere games. Multi-use cards. Love multi-use cards. But like, as you said, this is primarily worker placement. Not one of my favorites. The look of this, the theme of this. If they had led, when they're talking about the theme of this, that you are trying to, you know, lead the world to an industry, you know, to an energy transition of completely renewable future. To me, that sounds...
Oh, I didn't mention that.
That sounds grabbing, you know. But when you say, hey, we're going down to the salty sea to generate some geothermal energy, and we're going to like mine salt from brine and... to make lithium batteries. Some people that will get jazzed up about that. I'm totally lost. Business, industry, those kind of words totally, you know, tune me out. But man, everyone that I've heard talk about this, including you, have been pretty jazzed about this. So, you know, that says a lot about it. I think it's going to be another hit for Devere. It's just not one that appeals to me at the moment.
Yeah, you know, for a game like this, that the theme might not draw you in, like you mentioned already, it feels pretty thematic. I mean,
that's cool.
All the moving pieces. When you're reading through the rule book, you might be like, "Wow, this is too much. I don't need to run every part of this business." But then when it starts happening, and all these pieces start to fall in place, it's like it is so cool. Like I've got this technology now that allows me to dig, and so I need to make sure that I'm utilizing that well, you know, that I'm digging deep, and there's bonuses that you get, lots of things that trigger whenever you do dig down and extract the brine from those mines. All that's really cool. There's lots of different aspects that you can take in this game, although there's some things that you definitely will need to focus on, but I think there's lots of different ways to get points. And so even if you're not the best on the production side of things, okay, even if the industrial piece is not something you're very strong in this game, there's still ways to score points in other ways, like moving up on that stock track or fulfilling contracts. If you're doing that very efficiently, that's okay. And so it's cool. And all your equipment's breaking down too, as you dig and hit these rocks, like you have to then fix your equipment, but it's not, there's ways to mitigate all that, and it never feels very punishing. It just feels like a strong, strong business running industrial game. I love it.
Wow.
So it's a great game.
That's cool. Lead, you know, I wish that they would talk more about the thematic nature of the mechanisms. And I'll make sure, even if the theme itself isn't grabbing for a lot of people, but if you say what you're playing and what you're doing feels like you're actually doing it, it all makes sense. Now, that sounds compelling, especially in what may sound like a boring theme, but really is an important theme, you know, trying to move towards renewable energy and all that. So, you know, maybe that's a missed opportunity there. But hey, if you're having trouble with the rule book, I did notice over on YouTube, they do have a 52-minute rule video. So if maybe that could be helpful.
It might be a lot to take on. But again, I didn't struggle with the rule book. And, you know, I read a lot of rule books, and I've been very critical of Devere rule book specifically in the past. And this was fine for me. I don't know. Maybe for some reason it just clicked with me more than the other one. So that's Sultan Sea. It's a purchase for me. I mean, a high recommendation for me, I would even say. But again, if you're in the Darren category, I would definitely play this one before you just rush out and purchase it.
For real.
All right. We had other games that we wanted to talk about. We could have talked about probably five other games, but you don't want to hear us ramble all day long. What you want is to go to Board Game Geek and vote, nominate, I almost forgot the name of our podcast here, nominate Meepletown for podcast of the year for the Golden Geek Award. So go do that right now. We'll have some links in the description to know how to get there. And until next time, make sure you connect with us on all of our methods at Meepletown Games, social media, which we are not super active on, but we are more active in the Discord and sometimes on the Guild, Guild number 3407. Or you can send us an email asking us questions at meepletownmail@gmail.com. And that's going to do it for episode 170. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for coming down to Meepletown.
Later.
Hey, Darren, as we wrap up the episode, I am not going to tell a joke, but what I will do is congratulate our friend Jonathan, whose wife just gave birth to their son, Lucas. Very exciting. Lucas was born a week early, and he was 10 pounds, 3 ounces.
Woohoo! Welcome to the world, Lucas. Be all that you can be.